This week's soundtrack is brought to you by sleep brand Casper. We all strive for a good night's sleep. We'll let Casper help you achieve this with their outrageously comfortable mattresses, which come straight to you from the manufacturer. Considering you spend a third of your life on one, why not at least try the 100-night trial with free, no-hassle returns if you're not happy. Shipping's also free if you are within the UK. Interested? Good, because you, our lovely listeners and subscribers to Soundtracking, will receive a special offer. Get £55 off towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com and using the promo code Soundtracking at checkout. Fancy an alternative to traditional banking? Try Tide, the nimble banking service which saves small businesses time and money. Quick mobile setup, automated bookkeeping and invoice assistant are just some of the appealing features that you can get access to. Sign up for a free account for 6 months, then it's pay as you go with no monthly fees ever. To take up this offer, just use the promo code Soundtracking at tide.co/soundtracking. To welcome a directorial debutante to Soundtracking, what with their entirely fresh take on the art of source music and score. Not that Andy Serkis is a novice when it comes to cinema. As an actor, he played Gollum in Lord of the Rings and Caesar in the Planet of the Apes franchise, with roles in new Star Wars and Black Panther to come soon. He also brilliantly captured the essence of troubled troubadour Ian Dury in Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, which was directed by our good friend Matt Whitecross. Indeed, it's thanks to Matt you'll get to hear Andy's version of My Old Man from the film after his editor Mark dug out a copy for us. Andy's first major foray behind the camera is Breathe. Starring Andrew Garfield, Breathe tells the story of Robin Cavendish, who was given 3 months to live after being paralysed from the neck down by polio at the age of 28. He became a pioneering advocate for the disabled and travelled the world with his wife, Diana Blacker, in the hope of transforming the lives of others like him. Since Robin's son Jonathan is Andy's partner at their production and motion capture company Imaginarium, he had a deeply personal connection to the narrative. This extended to the music, which was composed by his friend Nitin Sawhney. Now, while this is Andy's first job in charge of an actual feature film, he previously directed the cutaway scenes for video game Heavenly Sword. And who did he get to score that? None other than Nitin, of course. Andy Serkis, welcome to Soundtracking.
Thank you very much, it's very exciting.
Director. That's your title now.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I've been wanting to do for a long time, and it's been growing gradually over the last decade. I suppose the first proper directing I did was coming back from King Kong, actually, Peter Jackson, and then being asked to direct some performance capture for a video game, which was wanting to use much more the cut scenes for these new video games back in the 2004, 2005 were beginning to become more narrative, more narrative, and they were looking for real performance, and that was sort of my first proper directing, I suppose. Reprising Gollum in The Hobbit, and then Peter Jackson asked me to direct the second unit, but it was always and setting up the Imaginarium, which is our company, which with Jonathan Cavendish, who obviously his parents are the subject of this story. All of that was all leading towards this moment.
Yeah, It's such a beautiful film and a beautiful story, and a real story of the good sides of human nature and love, and how love, the endurance of love through the most difficult of situations. And such a personal story, as you say, Jonathan's parents, you know, and the honesty that comes with telling their story and trying to stay true to that. When it came to the music for this, did you have conversations with Jonathan and Diana about the soundscape for it at all? Were there any conversations that you had? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I had a very particular idea about how I wanted to shape the movie musically. Yeah. And it was really to reflect Diana and Robin's wit. I mean, and that really goes for the whole way that this film is shot and designed and framed, and, you know, bringing Bob Richardson on as DOP. Everything I wanted, you know, in terms of the tone of the movie to reflect their maverick nature, their sense of humour, their wit.
Yeah.
And that went through to the music. And also, it is an incredibly romantic film, but it also is a romantic love that then transcends into a truer form of love, not just a romantic love, a love that is totally about empathy.
Yeah.
And not devotional duty, but true empathy. And your life being validated at the same time as you loving that other person. So it's not just sort of selfless love, it's a love that is completely reciprocal.
Yeah.
So
it's quite specific then, isn't it?
It is,
because you don't want it to be too gushy, but it's so important to get that
absolutely
right.
And there is this stoicism in both characters, and the emotions are all buttoned down in this film. It's not a gushing, emotionally kind of openly available, and it's the personalities of these characters, all of them, these sort of in their sort of eccentric maverick boho toff kind of environment.
That's
is
a great way to describe it.
You know, it is. It's very unique, and it's a singular colour and a singular tone. Music was actually, I think, the most difficult thing to get right, because,
really?
And therefore, you know, we brought on the great Nitin Sawhney, who I've worked with for many years now.
Yeah.
In fact, I was such a huge admirer of his work, and I thought he was the most awesome, sort of most culturally diverse in terms of music, and his understanding of world music is second to none. I remember seeing a film that he'd written a score for, an Indian film, Throw of Dice, which was actually put on BFI. It was a 1930s film, which was a silent movie that he wrote the score for, which was just incredible. hence he also is writing the music for Jungle Book, and his unique kind of position as an Anglo-Indian a person really sits perfectly for that in terms of Mowgli's journey and his search for identity. So,
well, I know, because you guys went on a trip I was kind of privy to, because I was working with Nitin at the time. You went to South Africa on this trip, and I love the kind of the authenticity and the depth of research that you go to get this authenticity with your work, and this idea of you going on a trip with your composer to you know, the landscape where it's based is wonderful to draw the richness and the influence from that.
It was a kind of rite of passage for Nitin as well, because he's not necessarily an outdoorsy sort of person. He's quite urban, I think he would admit. We went on this long, long hike, which ended up with us, you know, in the wilds. I mean, totally in the jungle, basically.
Yeah.
I think he was having to overcome lots of kind of
fears.
Yeah, it was great. It was really, really great. And then, of course, the sun dropped and it went pitch black, and we were still out there. And that's when things started to. He started to realise he might want to get home.
But were you working on Jungle Book before you started doing this?
Yes and no. So Breathe, when I asked Jonathan, I said, look, I'd really love to direct Breathe.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, let's do it. We actually went off on a research trip immediately after that. We went to South Africa to work out, because of the Kenyan part of the journey of the film, that we were going to have to shoot the Spanish sequences and all of the stuff that was abroad, basically. We have to find one country to do it, and that's going to be South Africa. So we went on a location scout. And then whilst we were out there, Jungle Book came through. And so we put Breathe down, and then we shot Jungle Book, the whole thing. Lots of pre-production for six months, worked with all of our A-list cast, and then shot on location in South Africa, and then knowing that we'd have this very, very long period of post-production. So we were in the middle of post-production when this kind of window opportunity
short
opened
window
up.
As well.
Very
Such
short.
A short window.
Yeah.
It's incredible what you were able to do in that 7 weeks.
Yeah, 7 weeks. I mean, it was 7 weeks to get all the finances together and then 7 weeks to shoot. So once we knew that Andrew and Claire had that period of time, that we just thought, well, we've got to go now. And it worked out with the timing and post-production of Jungle Book. So and Nitin's on both, and Nitin became the composer for both, you know, because he has this ability to just see the world from so many different points of view.
Is you say there are a number of locations, and trying to incorporate that within elements of the score subtly, which he does brilliantly, and also beautifully, colourfully, I would say, in a particular scene with the flamenco guitars in Spain.
Yeah.
also the generational thing as well, and the decades that it crosses as a film.
Exactly.
And trying to encompass all that is quite a big job.
It's a huge. It was a monumentally difficult thing, I think we all found, you know, because you don't want to lead the audience, you don't want to take them out of the film, you don't want it to be a gushing soundtrack. And this is why Nitin's so brilliant as a composer, is because he wrote some extraordinary pieces of music that, when they're all laid up next to each other, like there's a moment in the third act where they realise they can't really go on much further. Mm. And he says, "My love, my life." And you know, there's that scene where they can't really continue and they both accept that. And he wrote this most beautiful piece of music for it. And then literally on the very last day of the mix, you know, we're coming up to 6 o'clock, we decided to take it out, and it was the best thing for the movie. So there's just silence and nothing there. And he suggested that. And it's that, having the courage to know what is needed where, even though it was an amazing piece of music in its own right. And that's the thing about scoring. I mean, I think a lot of filmmakers that I've talked to, scoring is a hugely difficult part of the process, because you can totally destroy a film if you get it wrong.
Yeah.
And you've done all that work and you've shaped the film pictorially and performance-wise, but if the score can absolutely make or break the movie.
Yeah. And then in the film as well, there are a couple of instances where there are needle drops, where there are pieces of music, you know, where they're dancing. And were those specific? Were those things that you spoke to Jonathan and Diana about and were part of their...
Oh, yeah. Now, I mean, True Love was one of their favourite songs. And that duet at the end with Bing Crosby and Grace Kelly singing in harmony together, it just sort of completely demonstrates for us, you know, orally it really demonstrated for us what we needed to do in the movie as well as being their favourite song.
For you and I have a guardian angel on high with nothing to do. To give to you and to give to me love forever true. Love forever
true. The other song we use is Lee Marvin singing I Was Born Under a Wandering Star, because it happened to be Robin's, one of the only songs he could sing with his growling, you know, respirator voice.
I love that.
And it, again, that is, it took us through the ages, and so there are those moments. Yeah.
Wonderful to have that genuine insight into their world, to be able to incorporate that in the truth, you know, through music as well, is great.
Oh, absolutely.
Was born under a wandering star. I was born under a wandering star. Wheels are made for rolling, mules are made to pack. I've never seen a sight that didn't look better looking back. I was born under a wandering star.
I mean, I experienced that actually, a similar feeling when I was working with on the Ian Dury film
with
Matt Whitecross, and on with Ian's family, with Jemima Dury and Baxter. They equally gave so much of themselves to the project. The other polio story. It is not going to be a trilogy.
There's a thread running here, aren't
you? And I love that. I love that when the fabric of the story that you're telling is emboldened by truth and collective memory and detail that you could never really, you know, imagine.
Why don't you get back into bed? Why don't you get back into bed? Why don't you get back into bed?
Good evening.
One, two, three, four!
Reasons to be cheerful. One, two, three.
It's like being naughty. Passion.
You should think about getting a divorce.
It's far too logical.
Sex and drugs and
rap. Hey! Ladies and
gentlemen, all my brain and body needs.
I'm on the verge of something. Things are happening.
Sex and drugs.
That's for Long John Silver. No offence.
It's very I'm taken.
Everyone has their weakness. My weakness is loving him.
Hit me with your rhythm stick. Hit me. Hit me. It's good, say fantastic. Hit me. Hit me. Hit me with your rhythm stick. It's nice to be a lunatic. Hit me. Hit me. Hit me.
Magnificent.
What's wrong with that? That's perfect.
Matt's been on the show. We had a really lovely chat with Matt. He talked very highly of you. We talked quite a lot about sex, drugs and rock and roll. When you're playing not just a real person, but a real person in that world of music, and that's another element of the performance that you have to take on board and bring to life and stuff. Did you enjoy that side of it, and how did you prepare for that as well?
It was genuinely one of the most exciting jobs in my career, because the first day that we actually started work on it was recording 18 Ian Dury songs with the original Blockheads, and
wow.
It was a mixture of extremely tight sphincter moment with kind of like, I've just got to do it now, and if I really screw this up in front of the Blockheads. And then we started singing My Old Man, I think was the first song that we recorded. And I think I just felt them all relaxed, and they kind of went, oh yeah, oh, you sound just like, you know, and it was like, and that was like, oh great, no, that's all right. But that was, again, it was just like, that was a real rite of passage that day.
My old man wore three police whistles. He was never home for long. Drive a bus for London Transport. He knew where he belonged. Number 18 down at Euston. Double decker move along. Double decker move along. My old man. Later on he drove a roller, chauffeuring for foreign men. Dropped his H's on occasion, said good blimey now and then. Did the crossword in the Standard, at the airport in the rain. At the airport in the rain.
Go through those moments when you're getting into character and evolving a role, and then just talking to the family. They opened their lockup where all Ian's private possessions had been, which they hadn't gone into since he died, you know. And they gave me some of his costumes, his original costumes to wear for the film, and all of that. And it's, I mean, I'd always been such a massive fan of him growing up, and he was such a brilliant observer, a brilliant poet, just had such a great understanding of life, a really generous soul, you know, and difficult.
Had to have an operation when his to be. When his house had got to be. My old man, 7 years went out the window. We met as one to one. Died before we'd done much talking, but relations had begun. All the while we thought about each other. All the best, mate, from your son. All the best, mate, from your son.
I met him. I did actually meet him.
Did you?
Later on, when I was actually, he was going to write the music for a show at the Royal Court Theatre,
yeah,
based on Sue Townsend's book, The Queen and I.
Oh, wow.
About the Queen being rehoused on a council estate in Leicester. And so he was going to write the music for that, and we were researching that when he came up to visit us in Leicester. And he was not on good form, and you know, we were in a, I just remember being in a Chinese restaurant with him, and he was so drunk and so kind of like, so grumpy and not on form and kind of like, and it's just like, wow, you know. Of course, that was, you know, he could be, but so capable of amazing amount of love as well. So
yeah.
Then it was just great, you know, with Matt. And the take on that, actually, is a way into, you know, real life stories. You have to have a very specific frame, I think, to mm-hmm. get into a story of someone's life. And with that, it was from the point of view of telling Ian Dury, telling his own story as if standing on a stage,
yeah.
and the whole thing was built into a performance. That just suited a way of really being able to cherry pick the greatest moments and bring those to life. And similarly with Breathe, you know, all of the stories in Breathe, they're true moments. They're all unique anecdotes and moments that they all of the family that we talk to collectively remember. And the framework of Jonathan growing up throughout all of that was what really, I was just talking to my wife Lorraine about it. It's almost like, I think part of the appeal of Breathe actually is like, it's very relatable to as a movie, because it is like going through all your photos on your iPhone where you swipe and you kind of go, hold on a sec, in a few flicks you've gone from seeing your child, you know, age two to age whatever, you know. In the blink of an eye. And I think the journey travelled on with Robin and Diane in the movie is a travelogue in many ways. It's an adventure story in that respect.
How do you live like this? Yes, you suit.
I love you, and I want Jonathan to know you.
You can't love this.
Yes, I can. There must be something I can do.
Get me out of here.
Robin's going to leave the hospital.
No one with your husband's disability exists outside a hospital.
Has anyone ever tried? Robin! Robin! You're right, darling.
Much better.
£5 says you'll never make it.
You're on. Darling, call Teddy. I've had an idea.
A wheelchair that does his breathing for him. Are you sure it's safe?
It's worked so far.
Robin!
You owe me £5.
Yummy bastard.
Why do you keep your disabled people in prison?
No one's believed it's possible to live as you do.
Well, we should open the gates and set them free.
Bloody marvelous.
What now, Robin, a world tour?
Wouldn't that be an adventure? When I first became paralyzed, I wanted to die. My wife told me I had to live. Our son grow up.
Your life is my life.
I don't want to just survive. I want to truly live.
I love my life.
I think he should be in hospital. No?
You're quite right. No.
That piece of music we mentioned earlier that Nitin wrote for the amazing and hilarious situation that they find themselves in when they go on holiday to Spain, it's brilliant. Which, again, is truth. It happened.
Yeah.
Did you just kind of go, we need some flamenco Spanish music, come up with something? Was it as simple as that? Or was it?
No. When we were temping that, I actually temped the whole film. So, of course, when you're putting a film together, you use temp score. I actually used film soundtracks because of the True Love.
Yeah.
We were using that.
And Society.
Exactly. I used The Great Escape for when he's getting out of hospital, and you know, just like the thing from The Great Escape. again, it's about their wit and their and so. And actually, that scene when they landed and they're kind of the plane has taken off on this lumbering great big transport plane, which they've got their Bedford van in the back of with racehorses, you know, sort of comes into land in Spain, and they, we find them. I actually had Chitty Chitty Bang Bang playing, you know, because I always somehow, in a perverse way, thought this is sort of Diving Bell and the Butterfly meets Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, you know, the sort of crazy. Yeah. Robinsonian approach to life.
Oh, you pretty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, we love you. And our pretty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, loves us too. High, low, anywhere we go, on chitty chitty we depend. Bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, our fine four-fingered friend. Bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, our fine four-fingered friend.
It's uncategorical, a fuel-burning oracle, a phantasmagorical machine.
It's more than spectacular to use the vernacular.
It's wizard.
It's smashing.
It's keen.
Oh, chitty, you, chitty, pretty, chitty, bang, bang, chitty, chitty, bang, bang, we love you. And chitty, in, chitty, pretty, chitty, bang, bang, chitty, chitty, bang, bang, what we'll do. Here, chitty, far, chitty, in a motor car, oh, what a happy time we'll spend. Bang, bang, chitty, chitty, bang, bang, our fine four fingered friend. Bang, bang, chitty, chitty, bang, bang, our fine four fingered friend. Bang, bang, chitty, bang, bang, fine four fingered chitty, chitty, friend.
Almost like Carry On moments, yeah, where you kind of think when they're escaping from the hospital and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just,
it's like an Ealing comedy at
times. Just wonderful, and it's really refreshing as well in terms of how you've managed to get that tone. And it sounds like a lot of that was down to using all this temp music to keep that tone. And
that's right. Nitin really responded to that when we came to score it. It really was walking a tightrope, because you don't want ever to be commenting on it. You know, you don't want to take the audience out of the film, but at the same time, you gently want to keep that buoyancy and vibrancy. Yeah. These characters.
In terms of the incredible work that you've done with motion capture and things like that, has music ever come into that and been useful or helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, performance capture is the brilliant thing about it, apart from being this amazing 21st century tool for an actor to become anything. Also applies to other forms of performance. So, for instance, we worked with Coldplay on their video for Adventure of a Lifetime.
Yeah.
We met with Chris, of course, who's a good friend of Matt as well. And we just said, look, come into the studio. You can be anything. You can become anything. And we literally put lots of avatar characters up on screens and said, you know, you can be dinosaurs. You can be, you know,
it's a child's dream.
It is. It's like Mr. Ben. Do you remember Mr. Ben? It's like walk into
the changing room and come out,
pick out off the hanger what you want to become. And and then it came to apes. And they went, oh no, actually, we really want to be apes. So they just all got into their motion capture suits, jumped up. And literally within a day, Matt directed it, but I sort of worked with them for a bit, and they came up with that, and we literally were able to, and that's the great thing about it, is a very spontaneous, immediate form for transporting you into another character. You can see it come alive immediately.
Yeah,
it's not like you have to wait for months of animation to actually see it happen. So you can really calibrate your performance to these different avatars.
I can't go without mentioning the Caesar performance from the last Apes film, because, again, talking about truth and purity and just that character and what you did with that was absolutely fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Great.
I really genuinely love that character, and I loved playing him. And you know, going back to sort of flicking through your iPhone, and to play a character from birth throughout the entirety of his life, you know, and him to be an ape, and not only an ape, but an ape that's evolving and becoming more human-like. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were so many levels to that role.
It was wonderful as well to see someone, a new actor in that world,
yeah,
like Steve Zahn with Bad Ape, talk about falling in love immediately with a character. just wanted him. Yeah. Just wanted to have one at home.
Yeah, no,
it's incredible.
It's very funny, because Steve, he's such a brilliant actor, and when we'd finished shooting and the film had been made, and people were saying, oh God, Bad Ape's such a great character, did you do the voice? And he's like, and he wrote me this email saying, people are saying, did you do the voice? What do you mean, did you do the voice? I played Bad Ape. Well, you know, and I was like, yeah, welcome to my world.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And he was outraged that people didn't understand what he's been doing, you know. And it's great now, because the perception has definitely changed. And people are, you know, yeah, as you say, right. So it needs to be understood. But it's very gratifying when other actors are sort of banging the drum, yeah, not just
feel
me.
My pain.
Yeah,
totally.
It is my hope that out of this solemn occasion, a better world will emerge, out of the blood and carnage of the past. A world found upon faith and understanding. A world dedicated to the wish for freedom, tolerance, and justice.
Am I right in thinking as well that you and Nitin are working on a virtual reality version of his album as well?
Yeah, we've done some testing for that. So he worked with these great dancers, Wang and Ramirez, who actually are doing a show at Sadler's Wells. It's in Luxembourg at the moment, based on his latest album. And they came into our studio, and Nitin and Wang and Ramirez did this piece, 360, amazing performance. Mm. And then we've got, I can't talk too much about it yet, but we're planning on doing a big performance-captured musical, which is coming up fairly shortly.
You are the most multitasking person I have ever met. It's amazing. There's all these amazing plates and things that you spin, and we've got so much of you come this year as well with the new Star Wars film, and we've got Black Panther, and we've got all this stuff, and we've got Breathe as well. It's just never a dull moment.
I mean, this year has been particularly kind of crazy. It has been crazy, because we were editing Breathe at the same time as editing Jungle Book, go flying between two studios and kind of going off shooting Black Panther. I mean, it has been crazed, but I love it. And
yeah,
the only thing I crave is a bit more time with the family, really, because that's...
Yeah.
But then they're all busy as well. They're all doing their own thing, so we're kind of...
Christmas is coming, it's all right.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on Breathe. You know, our first introduction to you as a director, but there's so much great stuff to come. Jungle Book, I know, is going to be pretty special. So, Andy, really lovely chat to you. Thank you.
Oh, you too, thanks.
Sony's most recent album, Dystopian Dream, that's Spiral, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with the wonderful Andy Serkis. This week brought to you by our friends at Casper Mattresses and Tide Bank. My huge thanks to Andy for taking the time to talk to us. Breathe is on general release
now, with Nitin Score available via Varese Sarabandi. You can listen to the songs that featured in this show in the order they appeared by heading to edithbowman.com, which is also the place to subscribe to the podcast. iTunes works just as well if you prefer. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK, and do spread the word on your socials if you like what you hear. We're also thrilled to be bringing you our first Soundtracking Live as part of the BFI's The Big Thrill season. We'll be chatting to the fantastic composer Lorne Balfe. Now, if you'd like to join us on Saturday the 11th of November at 4:10, there's a link up on our Facebook page to get tickets. Next up, Italian director Luca Guadagnino, talking about his stunning new film, Call Me By Your Name, amongst many other things. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.